Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
We're all familiar with newspaper letters, pages, as the spring turns into the summer when people begin to ask if the first swallow of summer has been spotted. Both swallows and swifts arrive here in late spring or early summer from Africa, where they raise their young and they leave again in the autumn. But as we renovate and retrofit our buildings, what impact is that having on their populations? Well, I'm joined now by Niall Hatch, who's Head of Communications and Development at Birdwatch Ireland. Good morning, Niall.
Morning, Claire. How are you?
We've had a huge response to this since we said earlier this morning that we were going to talk about the swallows and the swifts. People really have strong links with them in this country. But before we get to those messages and some questions, can we talk a little bit about where the birds are coming from and what they're looking for when they come to Ireland?
Yes, both the swallows and the swifts are absolutely remarkable birds, and they have quite similar lifestyles and migration patterns, despite the fact that they're not actually related to each other in any way, even though they look so similar. And both of them winter, they spend our winter at least, in sub-Saharan Africa. We know from recoveries of birds that have been ringed with metal rings on their legs, we know that our swallows go to southern Africa. Many go to places like South Africa, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Namibia, places like that, and range around that part of the southern part of the continent. The swifts, what they do is they go much more widely than that. They can go anywhere from just out of the Sahara to around the Congo Basin and right down to southern Africa. And they spend the time just flying thousands of kilometres around the skies of Africa. They never actually land from where they leave Ireland. So swallows will regularly land. They'll go roost in trees or reed beds to sleep at night. The swifts, once they leave Ireland, they won't touch ground again until they return to Ireland the following summer.
Extraordinary. Yeah. And what do they eat? Flying insects?
It's flying insects, and that's the reason for their migration. That's why that they have to leave Europe, and including Ireland, of course, during the autumn, the winter months, because it's too cold for there to be enough flying insects for them here. So what they do is they really never experience winter. They have two cracks of air, which sounds pretty idyllic from our point of view, but the fact is the migration itself, it takes a big toll on them, and it seems that many of the birds, probably the majority of them, actually die in the attempt of the migration. So it's really only the very luckiest and the fittest of the fit that survive. Mm-hmm. But they have to do that in order to find enough insects to eat. Otherwise, they'd all perish.
So in Ireland then, when they come here, and they have been doing this for time immemorial, but is it becoming a less hospitable environment for them?
Yes, there are many things affecting these birds and many of their fellow sub-Saharan migrants, as we would call them, these birds that must cross the Sahara Desert to return to Europe to breed each summer. And those birds, because of that that migration pattern has developed, they're insect eaters, and they're being hit by many things. Climate change is certainly playing a major role in the declines. We're seeing the Sahara Desert, for example, getting wider and hotter each year, which is a problem. We're seeing places like the Iberian Peninsula, which many of these birds would pass through on their journey, becoming more inhospitable. There's less insects there. It's so much hotter in the summer. We're seeing more unsettled weather patterns in Central Africa. So that's having an effect. We are seeing also with changes in agriculture across Africa and Europe, including in Ireland, to sort of more intensive monoculture kind of farming. This supports lower biodiversity. There are fewer insects for these birds to actually be able to feed on. Then when you couple that with things like the destruction of hedgerows, pollution, all of these things, there's a lot ranged against them. And then, as you mentioned there at the start, there's then the issue then with access to nests, sites, which is in some cases the final straw for some of these birds.
Mm-hmm. Some people regard them as pests.
I would certainly disagree. Certainly with the swifts, they nest up very high in buildings. They wouldn't cause any problems for people whatsoever. You wouldn't even see their droppings. They're very, very clean birds. Swallows, which nest inside human structures like porches or sheds or barns or garages, places like that, yep, there's no denying that they do, and they do produce some droppings, and those are completely harmless. It's just a little bit messy. But in terms of the benefits they bring us, that far outweighs that. They consume huge amounts of insects, including things like midges and mosquitoes. So they're making our summer barbecues a lot more pleasant to attend. They're also beautiful to watch and to observe. They're stunning little birds. And when you think of that massive journey that they undertake, then to return to the same nest site each year, what a compliment that is to have them coming back. So I think the minor inconvenience of a few droppings on a wall or on the ground, that's a very small price to pay for having these beautiful birds around.
Well, let's come to some of our messages. Jerry's in Ennis. Our house is over 20 years old. Every year since we moved in, we've had five or six swallow nests each summer. This year we had one, and the reduced numbers seen flying in the area has been truly remarkable. So people are beginning now to notice the reduction in the numbers.
They are, and this is something that our scientific surveys in Birdwatch Ireland certainly back up. So while swallows remain fairly common in widespread birds, the trend is certainly very much downward, and it's been that way for the last few decades. And it's those pressures that I mentioned. It's lack of access to insects. It's fewer nesting sites. I mean, a lot of modern farm buildings, for example, where these birds would have traditionally nested, they don't have the nooks and crannies where these swallows can get in. Mm-hmm. We're seeing the same with the swifts as well, to an even greater degree, because they nest entirely in urban areas, in towns and in cities, often places like church spires and tall multi-story buildings. And we don't really know what they did before we humans came on the scene, because they rely on us completely now for nesting sites. And modern buildings have, again, fewer nooks and crannies for them to nest in. Yeah. So yes, we're worried about them, certainly.
But some people are putting in the nooks and crannies. Maria in Westport reminds us that Westport Town Hall Theatre has swift boxes built into its walls. And she wants to know, is it a good idea? And do you need to buy a box specifically for swifts?
Yes, so it is a very good idea, and it's something that we'd love to see more of. And we in Birdwatch Ireland have been working with a lot of things like bench heads groups and tidy towns groups and local authorities to have these installed on public buildings and in towns. There's no downside whatsoever to having swifts nesting in your town. They're a wonderful benefit. And it would have been something if you went back a couple of generations. People have been very familiar with these birds. They do need a very specific type of nest. They don't really build a nest at all. They nest on ledges and little gaps in brickwork very, very high in buildings. And it's very easy to mimic that with special commercially available swift nesting boxes or even swift bricks that can be built in to buildings in the construction phase or during the renovation phase, which provide a perfect nest cavity. It's totally self-contained. The bird isn't entering the building or anything like that. It's totally contained within the box. They'll use those for generations, and that can work really, really well, particularly in cases where swift populations have been lost from towns. We do know, though, as part of that, there's another thing that needs to be done to re-establish swift colonies in areas, and that's that they're very responsive to the calls of other swifts because they want to nest in colonies. They have a very distinctive sort of high screeching kind of call that they make when they fly in the sky, and that's the sound they're listening for when they're trying to find a new colony. So what you have to do really at the start of the nesting season, each summer around May, you need to have little loudspeakers actually playing this sound near the nest boxes to encourage the swifts to come and take them up. And once they're established, then they'll come back year after year. They don't need to play the sound anymore.
And Betty in Dublin would love to know what to do about magpies. She says they've taken over where I live and they've run out all the small birds. They're unrelenting. I have another one about pigeons, by the way. Someone wants to know how to keep them out because they seem to be taking over, and it makes it less attractive then for the smaller birds to come in.
It can, to a degree. To start with the pigeons, first of all, the pigeons themselves don't really pose much of a threat to other birds themselves. They will crowd out feeding areas, certainly. So if people are feeding birds in their gardens, they might see that the pigeons aren't letting the other birds get a look in, but they're not going to physically harm them in any way. That really comes down to, in many ways, the way in which food is being provided. I mean, there's different types of pigeons, but the main one that comes into gardens would be feral pigeons, which are only kind of a semi-wild bird. They're kind of a man-made, domesticated bird that kind of went wild again. They were captive bred over many generations from wild ancestors. They have no fear of humans, really, and they've adapted very well to life in our cities. But they're not very agile, so they'd like to feed on things that are on the ground. So if people are scattering seed and food like that on the ground in the garden, then certainly these pigeons will come down in big numbers to feed on that. But they're far less adept at perching on hanging feeders. So if people are using perspex or wire mesh feeders for things like peanuts and sunflower seeds, it's much harder for the pigeons to get a look in on those. And so I definitely would recommend that. In terms of the magpies, we get a lot of people communicating with us about magpies Birdwatch Ireland, and probably there's no denying that magpies do take a proportion of eggs and chicks of small birds during the summer. So do many other creatures, and actually it pales into insignificance compared to the impact that things like rats, grey squirrels and cats actually have on birds around gardens. The thing with magpies as well is that they're very adaptable and very intelligent, and really extremely intelligent in fact, and they're much better at overcoming obstacles and solving problems than most other birds. And sometimes we humans, we take that as meaning that somehow their success is because of their detrimental effect on the other birds, like they're surviving at their expense. It's actually most of the reasons for the declines of those other small birds. It's we humans, unfortunately. It's the same issues of climate change, pollution, disturbance, and particularly habitat loss. That's the biggest killer of all. Most birds are very specific in the kind of diet that they would eat. So if the type of food that they rely on disappears, they have two choices. They either die or they move on somewhere else. Whereas with magpies, they have a much wider diet. They're much more resourceful and adept in finding.
They'll eat anything.
So they'll eat anything, exactly, and that's the key to their success. So they're very adaptable, and so they're able to survive despite the worst that we humans will throw at the natural world. So I think sometimes the magpies can be used as a bit of a scapegoat or a way to deflect from the real problem, which unfortunately is our own species.
Okay, people who are bothered by swallow droppings, I have a potential solution here from a listener. Mm-hmm. I hang an umbrella upside down under the spot they deposit in our old cow byre, and I shake it out into the ground when they leave. Is that a good suggestion?
That's a fantastic. I'm going to borrow that one. Thank you for that. That's a very, very good idea. And just to say that these droppings themselves, that they're not harmful to humans. These birds really don't have any diseases that can affect humans. I know Peter's been out talking about things like bird flu recently, but the swallow is not a bird that's going to be particularly susceptible to mm-hmm. bird flu. And for what it's worth, bird droppings also make wonderful fertilizer for garden use. But that umbrella, that's a very ingenious solution. Brilliant.
Okay. A listener here now. Not welcoming the starlings who are nesting in the eaves of their attic. They say, and you won't agree with this now, but they'd like to get rid of them because they're dirty, but they don't know how to. What's the advice there, Niall? I mean, I know you would prefer if they left them there.
Yes, and just to say that under the Wildlife Acts, under Irish law, it's required to leave them there. And nesting birds are protected, and the nests can only be moved, which would mean the destruction of them, because the eggs or chicks would certainly perish. That can only happen under license for the National Parks and Wildlife Service. The key there is preventing the birds from accessing before the nesting season begins. And starlings, particularly, they're very adept at getting into any kind of gap behind maybe an air vent if the mesh is maybe missing from that, or a gap in the eaves of a house and getting in. And unlike birds like the swifts and also birds like house martins, which are birds related to swallows that make mud nests on the outside of a building under the eaves, they don't have no interest in going really into the building, whereas the starlings can do a bit more exploration. They can be quite noisy. So it's really about blocking that off using some sort of mesh or some sort of wire system or plaster, whatever it may be, before the birds return for the season. Having said that as well, where people can tolerate them, it is greatly appreciated, because the starling is another bird that's in decline. The really stark fact is that here in Ireland, 63% of our bird species are now considered in danger of extinction. It's that stark. We have a really poor record on this in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And the starlings, very often the reason they're moving into houses and areas like that is because they have no other option. So they're doing things like, obviously nobody wants them running around their attic and making a mess, but then that can be mitigated against if you do block them by putting up special nest boxes that will allow the starlings to nest elsewhere, so they continue to thrive and to do the benefits of doing, they're wonderful at eating things like leather jackets that can destroy lawns, things like that, without making a mess in your house.
I'm just wondering how you tell them to go to the box, though, where you want them to be. You know what I mean? They're not going to read the sign.
Yes. Well, no, absolutely. No, that is true. I mean, I think that if you do block off the nest access with them coming into the attic or wherever, because that's obviously very attractive to them, mm-hmm. if there is a system of boxes nearby where they can get, specific starling boxes, they'll be looking for a nesting site quite close to that.
So they'll go for that if they see it.
They may go for that. Yeah. There's very so few nesting sites around that beggars can't be choosers.
Maria in Galway has an owl family in the back field. They have a farm. Oh. They're long-eared owls, but we have noted the lack of swallows this year, and she wants to know, do the owls kill the baby birds, the other species?
No, so I can categorically say no, they don't. So long-eared owls are a wonderful species. It's our most widespread owl within Ireland, and this is the time of year when you actually will start to hear the young. The young have recently left the nest, and they make this very strange, squeaky call to beg their parents for food just around dusk. It sounds like a rusty gate swinging on its hinges, and that's often how we survey this bird and realise, because for the rest of the year, the adults themselves are fairly silent. We know that what they do, that they're nocturnal birds. They come out at night, but nothing but a benefit. They eat rats and mice and shrews, things like that. So they're great at controlling rodents. They certainly could never catch a swallow. They wouldn't even be interested in that. And so they pose no threat to the young birds at all.
Niall, so many questions coming in. We could keep going, but we do have to leave it there. Thank you so much. That was really interesting. Niall Hatch there from Birdwatch Ireland.